Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, a man that thinks Tom Brady is the best quarterback in NFL history, Casey Bloodworth. Seriously? You do think that? You can say hello.
I was waiting for you to introduce me.
I did.
No, you were just saying words, though.
Do you think that?
We're not addressing that. You can't. You're not going to trick me someday.
This is the
It's not going to happen.
This is a weird stage of like feeling something but not being willing to admit that you feel it. Do you need a therapist?
No.
Okay.
I'll say it to other people. It's not to you.
Okay. Do you want to say it to Michael so we can continue the show?
No.
Because I'm in the room?
Yeah, just in general. You just can never hear me say it. Certainly not on record. Am I stupid?
And Michael.
What's up?
Ah, I broke it up. You guys didn't both say it.
Well, Casey's getting sued, so, I talked to your lawyer and prepare some papers.
So I definitely knew that if I introduced him that way, he would do something differently. So, I gotcha.
Well, I mean, when you fall off the horse, you just get back on, and we're just going to start doing it again next week. It's not like you broke a curse or something.
You know who will never kick you off the horse? That's Oasis Games. And, they'll help you get back on, though. You can check them out at oasisgamesllc.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using code CCMTJ at checkout. You can get 4% off of every order by using the code Would That Be Good. And we love Oasis Games. Like, legitimately, just sold a ton of Magic cards there. It was really funny. I was like, hey, will you, I went up to the guy at the front desk. I was like, hey, will you tell me how much this is worth? And I just handed him my binder. And he handed it back to me with the price. And I was like, dang it, that's too much. And he was like, what? I was like, yeah, I didn't expect you to say that much. Now it's weird because it's like you want them to say more than you want. But it was like so much more than I thought it was worth that I was like, oh, man, maybe I want to keep these. Like, let them.
Oh, sure. So he built a value into it that you
that I didn't expect. It. Yeah. So sure. that's how good Oasis is, like buy prices are and things like that. So if you're in Salt Lake or you have the ability to check out their buy list, I would recommend doing that. I just sold them a bunch of cars for a really good price. So I highly, highly recommend them.
There's also only one employee who will make you call him by his rapper name.
that was such a tragic loss.
I'm not going to let that go.
Okay. So before the podcast, we were getting pumped up to DJ Khaled's All I Do Is Win, and Ludacris came on the screen and was like, does Ludacris make CDs anymore? And Casey says, no, he's made it. And I was like, oh, does that mean Akon's made it? And then Casey's like, yeah, he almost won a Nobel Peace Prize. And then we recorded the beginning of the podcast, and it got destroyed, and I was like, and I told you guys of this story in the past that you don't get to hear, well, now you're hearing it. It's a long story where the intro for Oasis Games is that nobody will make you call them by their rapper name. And then Casey said,
Austin actually insists on being called DJ Golden Gilts now.
And then I asked, how does Austin's name spelled on the back of his shirt? And Casey said,
Goodles.
And I said that was the best thing that ever happened to me. Also, we talked about launching a Teespring campaign with Austin's name spelled incorrectly on the back of all of the Constructive Criticism shirts.
How great would that be if people actually buy these?
Oh my gosh, and there's like 500 of them at a GP?
Yeah.
That's the GP Vegas shirt.
Goodles.
Oh my gosh. Goodles for like president or like...
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, make America goat again.
All right, here's the actual deal. We want a shirt, and we've wanted this for a while. We want a shirt for GP Vegas. Whoever can come up with the best Austin Geltz shirt design, like goat with how's the name spelled on the shirt?
Goetlz, right? Or S, however you spell his name.
Do you know, Michael, how it's spelled on the shirt?
It's just misspelled.
Well, I'll post it.
However you feel like, honestly. Goetles.
I will post the picture of Austin's jersey spelled incorrectly in the Facebook group. And what I would like to do is create shirts for people to wear that are like hashtag always improving shirts and like talking about how you design them how you want. And the best design that we can make, the best shirt idea, will win GP Vegas shirt. And we'll get GP Vegas shirts made so you guys can all see each other at the GP. We'll get a picture taken at the GP with all the listeners wearing their Austin's name spelled incorrectly. And whoever wins will also give some store credit to Oasis Games. We'll make this fun. We'll make Godel's great again.
And we'll make him put the store credit in.
Yes.
It'll be good times, yeah.
Yeah, and it'll come from his account, too, where his store credit's saved up.
Yeah, perfect.
Sounds like a deal.
Man, this is great. You can also support the podcast directly by going to Patreon. You go to patreon.com/ccmtg. Donate any amount that you see fit. If every listener donated just $1 per month, it would change our lives. We could quit our jobs. Some of us could. At least two of us technically could. And I mean, Michael doesn't work for anything, so he doesn't.
Sure. Yeah. He's basically
I could definitely pay Michael's salary.
Sure.
I
could just do that now, right? There's probably got to be some kind of change in this couch.
it's like not untrue, but you know.
But no, it really would actually change our lives. So if you have the funds and you can, go to patreon.com/ccmtg. You know, $1 per month is all that's necessary. And, you know, the podcast, however, will always be free. The point of Patreon is that you get to donate to the creators that are making an impact on your life through their free content. So it's like a huge thing that we get to do because of Patreon. So check it out at patreon.com/ccmtg. The point of this podcast, though, is #alwaysimproving. And that's our next segment. We want to be #alwaysimproving. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. So we want to do what we can to be #alwaysimproving. Casey, what have you done this week to do that in your life and in magic?
I'm just being persistent, not letting little things get to me in magic. I've had sort of up and down success recently, kind of from tournament to tournament, day to day. Having a hard time like really converting, like, you know, for example, Magic Online preliminary PTQ wins into doing well in the finals of those tournaments, things like that. And just remembering that if something works, you have to keep doing it. If you know it's supposed to work, like making the 51-49 decision the right way every time.
Yeah.
And just not getting bogged down in the results as much as the process.
Awesome. Michael, what about you? What was your hashtag? Also, welcome back from the pro tour.
Thank you.
Congrats on your string of day twos. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Day two didn't go as well.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, that's part of...
You 5-3 day'd one, right?
Yeah, I 5-3.
So if you had the same result, you get one extra pro point?
No, I would have gotten six total.
Oh, man.
10-6 is six. So, like, it would have been something, but...
been really. I mean, that would have locked you for silver, basically.
It would have been close. I still feel... So I have two GP slots sitting at 15 thanks to a good finish at San Jose. And that was what I was going to talk about. Like, I have not played as much limited as I should, but I've been working really hard on that part of my game. I played a lot of limited leading up to San Jose, after San Jose, in prep for the Pro Tour. And I was really happy with how that panned out at San Jose. And I was actually very happy with both my draft decks of the Pro Tour as well, although my overall record was not stellar.
Yeah, I think that it's so funny because, like, when people think about the Pro Tour, you know, for example, they might think of Modern. Like, I can't believe they're not doing Modern Pro Tours anymore. And I think that what the Pro Tour is showcasing, like, people have to remember that it comes out of Wizards' marketing budget. So at the end of the day, if they want to market the game, they actually really need to leverage, like, what's best to market this game, and also, like, what really showcases the skill of Magic players. Because that's what they're doing. They're saying, we like the fact that you're so good at Magic. We're going to use you to showcase that. And I think that Limited and Standard really do the best job of that. So you need to be well-rounded, and Limited is a huge part of that.
I mean, the secret of the Pro Tour is that you have to go at least 4-2 in Limited. You basically can't top 8 without going 4-2 in Limited.
Yeah.
It doesn't show up because players who are great in general are typically also good enough to get, you know, good limited results most of the time. But it's basically impossible to have Pro Tour success being a bad limited player.
Yeah, I mean, it's just hard to go 10-0 and constructed against the best 400 Magic players in the world all the time.
Your edges are just so slim. Like, that's the thing.
Going 7-3 or 8-2 is great. If, like, going 10-0 is basically impossible. It'll happen once every few Pro Tours. Somebody will go 10-0.
Yeah, I mean, I think one person did it this Pro Tour, and it hasn't been done in
Yeah. And, I mean, he
quite
went,
a few since then.
He went 13-0 in constructed.
He won all his top 8 matches to win the PT. I know that Donald Smith was 8-0 and then drew his last 2 intentionally to lock a top 4
which is
seed,
exactly. That's the thing that usually happens. So even if somebody's in the hunt, they don't end up finishing.
They don't have to do that.
Right. The difference is that if Donald Smith is someone that I know and someone who I talked with leading up to this, and like the secret is that he couldn't go 8-0-2 if he wasn't 4-2 in limited.
Very right? true.
Being 4-2 in limited allowed him to double draw, where had he, like, you know, been 3-3 or whatever, he would have needed basically XO at that point.
Very true.
So I think that just continuing to grind away and just recognize that, like, your results are going to be inconsistent sometimes, but knowing that you're moving in the right direction is a good feeling.
Awesome. So for me, this is a pretty big week. I have ended my Magic break. For those who don't know, for like over a year, I've been on a Magic break. I haven't been trying to qualify for the Pro Tour at all. And, that's over. I'm really excited about it. I got to play in a PPTQ online this weekend. I skipped game day to do it, which is like what I've been doing is like playing in game days or playing in states instead of PPTQs and stuff like that. And it's been really fun. Really enjoyed Magic over the last while. But I'm now back firmly into trying to go back to the PT, and I'm like really excited about it. And, it's so funny because like, the stakes are so much higher, and like you care. I find that I care so much more in these matches of Magic than a typical match. And it's so funny because like during my stretch of break, my win percentage in PPTQs actually skyrocketed, like to like the 80s or like 83% or something. And what? And but I was conceding in top eights, and it's funny because it's like I didn't care about the matches. So
you're
like,
all like Lucy and like,
yeah,
just there to have fun.
So I hope that I can channel some of that and continue the success in the Swiss, and get to the top 8 and like really close out some of these PPTQs.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, because it's funny because like my goal is like a 75% win percentage in Magic overall. So like, if I can just, you know, do that.
Yeah. It's it's the easiest way to do it is to just win all your matches all the time, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of my hashtag always improving moment. It's just like full steam ahead. I'm like really excited about it and have the go ahead from the wife, so it's really exciting. We're gonna announce it this week. We already have some lined up. But we have, so the Patreon question or the Patreon participation of the week, we've included a Deck Doctor segment. And when we do the Deck Doctor segment, one segment will actually be taken out of the podcast, whether that's hashtag always improving or the training grounds or whatever, kind of depending on how we want to do it. And so we are really excited about this. We already have people who want to do it. So if you want a Deck Doctor or you want to participate in the Patreon question of the week or the Patreon participation weekly, just go to patreon.com, become a patron of the show. And yeah, there's a thread for it, and we are happy to either go over your deck list in depth. So like 10 minutes of the podcast will be dedicated to your deck list and what we would do and what we would change or what we love about it, what could be better about it. And we're really excited about it, and we already have some people ready to participate. So patreon.com/ccmtg, and this part of the show could feature your deck. So check it out. Let's go on to the card of the week. So this week we are focusing still on the Pro Tour and the GP, but the power rankings are going to be based upon the Pro Tour results, and the GP results. We're going to talk about them as well, but the card of the week, we felt like we were going to give it out last week, and we still feel like this is something that should be given out. The card of the week that we're going to talk about this week is Heart of Kirin, and what a week it had, Pro Tour weekend. And we're going to give it out to one of our patrons, who we just want you to know we really appreciate. To be eligible for this, you'd have to donate $3 or more per month, and anything that you see fit, You know, it was really appreciated, but to be eligible for this $3 or more per month, we're going to give it out to Marianne McDonald. Marianne, we don't worry about the shipping costs. We'll definitely pay them. Yeah, just hit me up and we'll send you the Heart of Kieran. So Casey, why is Heart of Kieran the card of the week this week?
Well, it definitely had its breakout performance at the Pro Tour. It was incredibly popular, really propelled Mardu vehicles into prominence in that tournament. It was, other than Scrap Heap's Grounder, it was the most played card in the top eight. It was just an incredibly powerful card and something that we're going to see a lot of going forward in a, you know, brand new card out of Aether Revolt.
So Marianne is a player in, is she in England?
Ireland, I think.
Is it Ireland? Okay. What should she be excited about in getting this card? And like, how long do you think she's going to be able to play with this card? Is this something that, because of the set that it's in, is going to do? Is this going to be in standard with Veteran Motorist? I mean, it's gonna, all of the cards that are enable it are all in Kaladesh, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Except for Gideon.
Sure.
Right, which
and,
is its
and Nissa. Right.
But Gideon's really in standard for another 18 months or
no,
nine
no
months?
Another
6 yeah, like 8 months.
8 months
until October, yeah. So yeah, I would expect that it will continue to see play. I don't think that it will get banned.
Oh, definitely not.
I mean, I think it's better than Smuggler's Copter, and that got banned, so who knows.
I do too, but I think that was more about that card being ubiquitous than power, straight power
yeah,
level.
Something interesting about this is that it saw play initially in like the green-black decks, they've moved away from that in favor of, if they're playing a vehicle like Aethersphere Harvester, and then some of the black-red decks will play it, but not all of them. They also will, a lot of them also play Aethersphere Harvester. The decks that, the other deck that like it's an auto include in is actually Green-White Tokens.
Yeah, it's so good in that deck.
So, like, those are the two decks that and Mardu Vehicles are the decks that really focus on it. And, you know, it's because those decks can exploit its other ability as well as its crew cost.
You really just need the density of three power creatures for two or less mana. So, like, the most successful Green-White Tokens list from the PT was actually playing Toolcraft Exemplar as well, in addition to Lamholt Pacifist and Seven Planeswalkers. So... You really need specifically Toolcraft Exemplar, I suppose Greenbelt Rampager if you wanted to go that way. But
yeah,
but Toolcraft Exemplar
Scrounder maybe, yeah.
You really need the one drops that are able to crew it.
Sure.
And it doesn't go so well with like the black green two drops, just given that very few of them are three power.
Right, they're mostly 2/3s on their own, right?
Yep. Yeah.
The card is just bonkers, and it's certainly going to be around. You know, numbers will fluctuate, but that card's never going to be, like, bad.
Yeah, I was surprised. I kind of thought it might cap itself out a little bit more, like, so that it would be hard to play four, because generally legendary two-drops, like, have frequently had that issue in the past.
Yeah.
But it's actually so powerful that if your opponent doesn't kill it, they pretty much can't win.
Right, it's sort of in, like, Geist of St. Traft or Thalia territory where, like, yeah, it doesn't really matter that you have one stranded in your hand because
your opponent will
probably
kill it.
Can't win.
Right. They will kill it or they will die. Those are the choices.
Yeah, they get two options.
Right. So it's kind of fine either way. Like, I was finding in a lot of matches, I was happy to occasionally draw the third. It's like, if I had, like, two in my opening hand and drew one within a couple of turns, it was often a good thing, which is sort of absurd.
Awesome. So Marianne, just a... We'll send that out at the end of the month. Just hit us up with an email, and we'll get that sent your way. So thank you so much. We appreciate it. Let's move on to our power rankings. Like I said, we're going to base this on the Pro Tour. It's actually going to be based on the number of match wins that decks received during the tournament that were posted to the Daily MPG page. So they don't get points for top eight. They just get points for the number of matches won with the deck. They get 4 points for the top finishers, 3 points for next, 2 points, and then 1 point for 18 and stuff like that. Let's break this down from the bottom. So, and this is at the Pro Tour, and we'll talk about how these decks did at the GP. We're just breaking down the Pro Tour numbers right now. So we had two decks tie with 10 points, and I think the decks are very different, and I think there are different decks within those decks. So Jeskai Copycat, came in with 10 points, and Four Color Copycat came in with 10 points. I think from the GP, we can conclusively say that the best version of Jeskai Cat is just Jeskai Control with the Copycat combo in it.
Yeah, that's kind of how I've always felt. I mean, I could see there certainly being weeks and times where you'll want to play the more all-in, like playing, you know, more combos like Josh R. Layton and his team did at the Pro Tour, playing like Elder Deep Fiend and Aetherworks Marvel. And,
oh, well, we're just games. Talking about the Jeskai version.
But I think that in general, the more balanced, like, power deck that's just powerful by playing strong answers, which there's a lot of in Standard. Control is in a really good place in Standard right now. And just shoehorning it into that deck is really powerful.
Now, the four-color deck, the best version I did think was actually the version that Jerry Thompson piloted. The one that was an Aetherworks Marvel, Elder Deep Fiend, four-color combo deck.
Yeah, I actually am much more into this deck than the Jeskai version. I feel like there's a lot more room for exploration. And you just generally have a lot more deck building flexibility. And I think that we've seen a few different versions do well. Some people are leaning a lot on Planeswalkers. Some people are looking more at, you know, Elder Deep Fiends or Aetherworks Marvel. I think there's a lot of unexplored territory here. And this deck is really good at both comboing multiple times in the same game. Oath of Nissa, Felidar Guardian is a really strong interaction, as is just Planeswalkers and Felidar Guardian.
Yeah, it's sort of like a... Just using it as like the Chain Veil is surprisingly powerful a lot of the time.
Well, it at least makes it playable, right? It's not about it being great necessarily. It's about not having to play cards like Oath of Jace and Oath of Chandra in your control deck, where there's like actual cost to playing cards like that. Whereas when you're getting to flicker like Oath of Nissa, it's kind of a card you want anyways. All of your creatures that have these comes into play abilities, like they have some synergy. There's just the four color deck is a lot more synergistic with Saheeli and with Felidar Guardian. I think that that's a pretty big advantage.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a lot there, and I could agree with that. You get a better proactive game plan, right? You're not just like sitting back on cards hoping that your opponent plays into your removal, things like that, which sometimes, if you're playing against like green-black with Jeskai, you end up with a lot of removal, and they end up with a lot of removal, and you're kind of in a weird stare-down, which isn't so bad, but you're not as favored in those like super long games as more traditional control decks.
Yeah. Where
the four-color deck, you get to just kind of play Rogue Refiners and Aetherworks Marvels and, you know, whatever else you're into. You get to just like have a plan outside of what your opponent is doing.
You're a lot less all in on winning through just the combo, so people can't really, like, your opponent drawing a bunch of Grasp of Darkness or whatever just doesn't really especially matter.
Next up we have an interesting category that we put in here, and that's Gearhulk control decks. This included blue red Jeskai and then one Grixis and one blue black control deck. They did build out the Pro Tour. They each combined for 1 point each.
It was the Sultai version, yeah. It was like Black Green Delirium with Gearhulks and Glimmers.
No. I was just talking about blue Gearhulk decks.
He wrote Green Black, but he
meant I wrote Green Black, but it's actually...
Oh, okay.
It's actually... It's supposed to be blue black. There was one blue black all-out control deck, one Grixis all-out control deck, all with blue Gearhulks.
So many of these were Dynavolt Tower decks.
Yeah, the blue-red ones were... The decks that did the best were like straight-up Jeskai control and straight-up blue-red control. This is going into the GP. This is the deck that I thought either in the form of blue-red or Jeskai would actually come out on top. And I thought this in shared. If you listen to coverage, like LSV said that's how he would attack that metagame. And I wonder if, like... I wonder if the GP circuit is going to reflect the way that the SCG circuit works, and there's going to be very little amounts of innovation in Magic now.
That could be true. I think the biggest problem is just that Mardu and Green-Black demand very different answers. The cards that are good against one are pretty bad against the other, and vice versa.
Yeah, it's really funny. I was talking to one of our listeners about this, as I was talking about like what I like in Jeskai Control right now, and we talked about how like I really don't love Fumigate against Mardu, because like planeswalkers and vehicles, like, you just can't win. once you cast that Fumigate, you could just die.
Metallic rebuked for one mana.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, the post board, that definitely could be something that happens. One thing, though, is that Fumigate, however, where you would think that it would be good against the Mardu Vehicle deck, is actually really good against the green-black decks.
So it was really good against the versions of green-black that I felt like were built to win the green-black mirror when it looked like that deck was kind of running away as the best deck in Standard. I'm just ambivalent on these straight control decks as a whole right now. I really feel like building a deck list that has game
can,
against
can attack both.
Yeah, I feel like you're going to have to pick which you'd really like to beat, and ultimately over a long event, you're just going to have to beat both.
Okay. Interesting. That's an interesting opinion. This and I could be wrong, because like obviously the numbers of the GP didn't show this, but Gearhulk control decks did outperform the copycat decks, but what appeared to happen is people were like, all right, so Jeskai Controls would answer this, but there's just no reason not to include the combo, is what it looked like happened.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, because I think that people came with it from multiple perspectives. Either there's no reason not to have the combo, or there's no reason to have the combo, because people are going to play around it. And if you're playing a control deck and like your opponent never taps out, or like tries to advance their own game plan because they're worried about getting combo killed, that's the actual dream.
Yeah.
If your opponent is like playing super slow to the board.
But the decks that were successful were actually Jeskai Cat decks.
Right. Yeah. Like as the singular deck, right? Because there were.
No, there were two more in the top 32, right?
There was one in the top eight, and I'm not quite sure on the rest of it. My impression is that basically it's impossible to build the Cat deck to have a good Mardu matchup. At least the straight Jeskai version. And that's a pretty big deterrent from wanting to play that.
Yeah, I wonder. I know that other people are saying they're having success with Blue Rider right now. I think the truth is, I believe that with Emrakul gone, I think that I believe there is a world that exists where Gearhulk has a good matchup against Mardu. I don't know that we're there yet, but like I have a hard time believing that you don't have the tools to do it. But I could be wrong.
So I think the thing is that the Mardu decks right now aren't even trying, and they have positive matchups there. If you get Mardu players actually committing sideboard slots to that matchup at all, I really question how good it can be.
Yeah, I mean, I think that just the actual card type vehicles is really, really good against control decks.
It is, yeah.
Because they tend to have really good stats, so they're hard to kill with things like
Harness Lightnings. I think one of the reasons that I thought was so strong in favor of these decks going into the Pro Tour was Mardu wasn't playing Gideon in our testing very much.
Yeah, it's traditionally been a sideboard card for that deck. Or like a one or two in the main deck.
Well, the two of them in the main usually. I mean, and they went up to like four of them.
Yeah, I mean, I tried straight Jeskai against Mardu for a while before the PT and could not really get it to win.
Okay.
It just felt like I had to have so much go right compared to the Mardu draws.
Well, let's go on to the next deck. The deck that... So we have the grayest of sections going on right now, and that's in the form of Green-Black Constrictor and Delirium. So the way that I separated these decks is they needed to like have a traverse package, quote-unquote, or other cards that care about Delirium to be considered Delirium decks.
So not just Grimflare.
So I don't think any of the decks that played Grimflare at the Pro Tour didn't play traverse.
Okay. I just know that like there's a lot of breakdown of the green-black decks that involve basically literally every combination of green and black
cards. I think what will happen is that we will eventually have a split similar to how we had an Abzan control and an Abzan aggro, quote-unquote. And I think it will be green-black constrictor and delirium decks with constrictor. I think that's what will happen.
I think it's more likely that they'll converge. Like,
you think that it will end up being one deck?
Yeah, I think that the decks are similar enough that they're so close to each other.
The problem is that I think that some weeks it's correct to play Ishkana Traverse, and some weeks it's not.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to venture, I guess I would say that's probably a sideboard package for the mirror and things like that.
Oh, I think it's terrible in the mirror. I think it's specifically for vehicles.
Oh, really? I think
that, in the mirror, you just want to, like, literally play Constrictor, Rishkar, Verdurous Gear Hulk kill you.
Interesting. I found Ishkana to mostly be good in those situations, just as, like, it's a lot in the way. It lets you catch up in when your opponent has nut draws.
But what's your next... What are you dropping after it?
I mean...
So, like, so you're... So
Ishkana
let's say
into
your
Hulk
same
is,
draw,
is
okay?
also great, right?
Let's say that we have the exact same draw. I have Constrictor, Rishkar, Verdurous Gear Hulk. You have Constrictor, Rishkar, Ishkana. I'm winning that game.
Sure. I mean, if I'm on the draw, I'm probably more trying to play like removal than just curving out with you, though, right? Because if we're any time, like even if you,
sure.
if I'm on the draw and we both have the exact same cards, like even if I play Verdurous Gear Hulk, I'm still probably already almost dead, and I can't attack you with my guys because I'm dead on the crackback. Like, so being on the draw is just kind of a disaster there anyway.
Sure.
If we're both curving out that way, so I'm probably more interested in like Grasp, Ruinous Path, Ishkana than I am in that.
Oh, so you want like Ruinous Path in this deck too?
Well, if you're playing, I mean, I was just trying to think of something that would actually sure. like maybe give you Delirium someday.
That seems like the issue to me. Watching Pittsburgh this weekend,
that's what I thought. Watching Pittsburgh
coverage.
Is the people just couldn't get Delirium.
It's
they were
too
have the,
fast.
They have
the
like
format is too fast.
Yeah,
for
they
that.
Couldn't get Delirium because like people like. You specifically, there's no way to get sorcery into your graveyard. Most and there's definitely no way to get enchantment into your graveyard.
Grim Flayer seems mostly miserable right now.
Yeah, I
it
agree.
It gets outclassed really fast. Like,
so,
if that's the case, then probably playing Delirium is just wrong.
Like, the person who won was playing Sylvan Advocates, Oath of Nissa's, and Nissa Voice of Zendikar's, which I believe was an Oliver 2 list. I was watching him play that on Thursday or Friday in preparation for the GP. But it was like... It was really giving his opponents the business in the mirror. Like, Grim Flayer being a 2-2 and then playing, like, a 2-3 in your 2 slot. And then Nissa's... He was doing a really good job. That list was doing a really good job at gumming up the board and then going a little bit bigger. It just seems really hard to get Delirium right now. Like, you can't really play Vessel of Nascency.
Yeah.
Just without those cards, it's like if you're not usually hitting them with Grim, if it's pretty hard to hit them with Grim Flayer and you can't play Vessels and you can't play Grapples.
It's
like,
funny because like people asked me about, because I made a deck tech on Emerge. And they're like, oh, like, why don't you love this deck anymore? I'm like, dude, I don't have time.
Yeah, if you play like Vessel on one,
if you play a Vessel on one, like you're in trouble.
You're basically this was sort of, I mean, Green Black doesn't have quite the same. Isn't in quite the same space, but like you basically are having to have like turn 4 backside of Kozilek's Return or you're dead every single game.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's not good enough because you just like they don't crew Heart of Kirin because they see it coming and they attack and you still have to go for it and then you get Unlicensed Disintegration and
then you lose.
It was funny because like I was like, if I was going to go big like that, it would have to be with like a like green red control ramp deck with like Kozilek's Returns and Incendiary Flows, Chandra's and Nissa's and Worldbreakers and like not even Ulamog, like just like a Kozilek's Return deck that like, and it was so funny because that's kind of how I feel about Delirium too. It's like where am I gaining an edge here against what? And I do think that it, like, if people can adjust to beat the hyper aggro decks, which usually happens, right? Hyper aggro is just not usually good for long enough.
Kind of. The problem is that calling Mardu Vehicles hyper aggro is really underselling the synergies and resilience going on there.
That's true.
Right? Like, Scrap Heap Scrounger is oppressive.
Yeah, people have already called for the banning of Scrap Heap Scrounger.
I mean, that card did have 31 copies out of 32 in the top 8 of the Pro Tour, right? Like, that people talked a lot about Heart of Kirin, but like that was actually the best performing card of the Pro Tour.
Well, Scrap Heap Scrounger and Heart of Kirin are like best buddies, too.
Oh, yeah, it's
right?
a nightmare.
You're like... That card is just great with vehicles in general, but it's especially great with Heart of Kirin, where like you can attack using something else, and then you can sort of block with your Scrap Heap Scrounger sometimes. You can bring it back at instant speed to block. Like, it's just so good together.
Yeah. Let's go into the number one deck. Obviously, Gear Hulk Control had 11. Delirium had 16. Green-Black Constrictor had 50 points. 50 points. That's a lot of points.
Yeah.
But...
great, actually.
Mardu Vehicles had 92 points at this Pro Tour.
Yeah, I mean, the entire top 6 of the Pro Tour was Mardu Vehicles.
It's so funny, because, like, if you look at the GP, I still think that, like, Mardu vehicles, if we had included GP results, would have still just blown Green Black and Sugar out of the water, even with Green Black's great performance.
So something else I would say about Mardu, I think Mardu is a much tougher deck to play than Green Black. And I know that in day one, they were saying it was less represented than Green Black. That, you know, people keep thinking this Green Black matchup is so good for Green Black. And it's just like, it's 50-50-ish. It's close.
Yeah, it's actually, I think it's actually very close to 50-50. And people assume that, you know, like Walking Ballista is good, but it doesn't beat
You need
Gideon.
To have a lot of it with
You
the
need
Walking
Constrictor
Ballista.
And Walking Ballista.
Yes.
If you have both, it is a good matchup.
If you have both and it's on the play.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had draws where on the draw that's actually too slow, which sounds absurd. But if your opponent is like Toolcraft Exemplar into Heart of Kirin.
My opponent did that in my limited PPTQ this week.
Oh, how'd you feel?
We'll get into that during our training grounds.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Anyways, I just like this deck is just really powerful. You get to play so many. Both Mardu and Green Black have a remarkable amount of synergies for what feel like good stuff decks.
So what would you guys play this week?
I think that I will probably just continue to play Jeskai Saheeli for a little while, maybe straight Jeskai Control, but somewhere in that family.
If I didn't want to put in much time working on a deck list, I would just play Mardu because I think that you can't really go that wrong with it. If I wanted to play something different for the sake of it, I would work on a four-color Saheeli deck.
Yeah, I would play Jeskai Control, or I would work on Jerry Thompson's four-color deck. What is the reason, by the way, Michael? I don't want to copy either of you, so I'd rather you guys just say why you guys both like those style of decks.
No, well, I think that it's a deck that I've been playing, so there's the practice element. But then I think it's powerful. It has all the tools to, even if you don't have great matchups across the board, you have the tools to win every matchup. And that's just kind of where I like to be in general.
I think that Mardu is just like obviously great, and I probably don't really need to justify wanting to play it beyond that.
I mean the four-color deck.
The four-color deck, I think there's just like, it's really hard to say where you should be going with your list. And I think that's a fun place to be. I think that gives you the opportunity to play something you really enjoy and like feel ownership over. And yeah. I think that's a lot of fun.
So let's go on to our training. So every week on the podcast, we want to talk about something that's going to make you better at Magic or life in general. This is a topic that actually covers both. So if you get better at this, you will get better at Magic and life. And those are typically like some of people's favorite episodes. This one we're going to focus on Magic, but you can still apply the idea behind it and the tips behind it maybe in different ways to life as well. And we're going to talk about avoiding tilt. So I actually specifically remember the first time that we addressed this subject on the podcast. We were sitting around my kitchen table at my old apartment with our old microphone that's sitting next to me. And I was explaining the concept of tilt with my arms. And Casey was laughing just like he is now. And then was like, dude, they can't see your arms. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
what
I
is
do.
Tilt?
Then,
listening to this.
And then I started
trying
to explain.
And then you tried to explain
it,
tilt and also used your arms.
Yeah, I couldn't not use my hands. Yeah, it was actually great.
But the idea of tilt, the concept is when you do something wrong and it causes, if you could imagine like a straight line, and then the line actually, when you make a mistake, starts to go down, right? You start to get a, isn't it axis the word I'm looking for?
Well, yeah, kind of. Like a tilt on the axis.
Yep, a tilt on the axis. And then what happens is the more you make mistakes, the more that gets extreme, the more extreme that gets. And it means that like when something goes wrong, something else goes wrong because of it, something else goes wrong because of that. And it just becomes a downward spiral or a downhill, this huge decline in your decision making. And it's a huge problem that, you know, there's so many Magic players that played poker, and it's something that's talked about in poker a lot, where you make a bad play. And I think we might have talked about this during our Don't Compound Mistakes episode, which is just something we need to revisit. It's just actually one of the best concept in episodes we've ever done. And the it's important to not let that happen, because when you make a bad decision, you can't let that be another bad decision and another one and another one. You have to take a step back and realize that, you know, something's going wrong and you need to address it. So we're going to tell some stories about our experiences in Tilt. And I'm going to start. These aren't our most tilting stories, by the way. Like, I think that both Casey and I think that our most tilting experiences all happen in top eights where there's no recovery. Like,
yeah. I mean, there's also, like, you know, there's things that have happened that I feel like I'm still on tilt for, you know, months and years later. And, you know, that's no way to live your life. So I'm not trying to, you know, encourage anybody to feel that way.
Yeah. Well, let's go over mine. So in the old PTQ system, I was playing, we as a testing team had a green-red devotion deck before the deck, like, took over the SCG and was, like, the best deck going into Pro Tour Origins. Like, the before that, like, during the green-black, the black devotion, mono-blue devotion, Esper control era, we had come up with a green-red Xenagos Domari Raid devotion deck list. And we had really good success with it at a PTQ in Salt Lake as a team. And I took that deck to a PTQ in Las Vegas like 2 weekends later or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit longer because I'd started playing Mono Blue already by that point.
Okay. Yeah,
it was in that same season, though.
Yeah. And there was a match. I was in a winning in for top eight. And I had a Xenagos in play. Or not even in play. It was actually in my hand. And I thought for probably like a minute and a half, maybe longer. But like, all right, how can I win this game? Because my opponent had a Desecration Demon in play. And I realized that I needed to make mana to play a guy. I think it was like a Stormbreath Dragon or something. Sacrifice another, my like Burning Tree in play. Attack him. Let him attack. Like, he couldn't attack me back because he would die on the crackback. Basically is what the play I needed to make was. I like do the math with like my, just make enough red mana basically, which you could do in this version of green red devotion. You could actually make red mana because you had Burning Tree Emissary.
Your Xenagos was like pretty close to like Super Seething Song in that deck.
Yeah, it was insane. And also your Nykthos could make red mana.
Yeah,
because you had Burning Trees in the deck. So I just had to. I basically had to make mana and activate Nykthos, and I would have enough mana to play Stormbreath Dragon. It might have been enough to like activate it or two, something that made it so that I would win the game. And the commonly used mode of Xenagos in that deck was make a token. So I had thought about this play. I said, Xenagos, make a guy. And I was like, whoa. That was like a reflex. I actually want to make mana. And and I knew right when I said it, I was like, make a guy. Mana.
Make a guy with the mana that I make from my Xenagos.
Yeah. My opponent wasn't falling for it. We're like in the game three in a win and in for top eight of this PTQ. Which, if you could imagine, is like, it's nothing like a PPTQ. Like,
yeah, they were like high stakes, high intensity.
Yeah. It would be more like a win and in for top eight of an RPTQ. Not quite that intensity.
Or like day two of a Grand Prix. Like,
probably more. I feel like it's more intense than that.
Yeah, I think that's like the closest thing to it.
Yeah, but for people who didn't experience it, but you know, like top 18 PDQs used to be like considered an accomplishment, to mid level players, and I make this I just say the wrong words, and I know I'm gonna lose now, Because, I'm going to have to sacrifice my guy to tap down his Desecration Demon. And,
then it's just, a war of attrition you can't actually
win. I can't ever win. It's so funny. And he might have had double death. I don't remember the exact board state. Because, it's been so long.
Two and a half years or whatever, yeah.
But, I knew that when I did that, I was like, fetch. So, I think the game went on for a couple more turns. I lost. And I would say inconsolable. Because I knew that I had just, and then so I walked away and I actually cried, and it was a pretty big deal. I was in love with this deck that I'd worked so hard on, and I came back and Quentin was like, "Hey, just so you know, They posted tiebreakers. This is the position you're in. If this, 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 and this happens, if you win your next round, you will top 8 this. If these things happen. I was like, all right. Like, I did recoup, win my next round, and took 9th at that PTQ. My, you know, the one thing went wrong where I, like, couldn't
make... Your if didn't get there.
Yeah, my if didn't happen. And, you know, I think that that was both... I mean, like, I'm still upset about it. Like, why would I say the wrong thing after thinking about this turn for, like, minutes? And it was so upsetting. But I was able to recover, quote unquote, and win my next round. But it was tough. It was tough. I think that's the most, like, because for a few reasons. One of the, because it's in my control, right? I can just say the right thing. Like, I can just say the right thing and win that match.
When you told me about it, like, at the tournament, I was like, well, don't do that again. Like, there's nothing else you can really say to that. Like,
which is why it's so upsetting, right? It's right. Like,
there's not like a lesson to be learned there. Just don't do it. Just next time you have the chance to do that,
just
don't
slow
do
down,
it.
Spencer.
Yeah, just don't do that. Whatever you do, make sure it's not that.
Almost anything but that.
You actually, if say, I just do the other thing, I mean, on
you,
the card, well,
like, you could say almost any other set of words, and it wouldn't get you in that kind of trouble.
Right. I the mean, if you the just, one where like, I like lose the game. Yeah.
No, I mean, if you just like spoke gibberish for a few minutes, so mostly cool.
Michael, what about you? What is your tilt story? What is your most tilting moment, or like the story you'd like to share?
All right, so I was playing Grand Prix Denver in, I guess, December, and I don't know. I have this deck that I've worked really hard on that I got a bunch of people to play, and I had 2 buys, and like I'm 3-2 and playing Red Green Marvel against this blue white control deck. And so he has like 2 cards in hand, and I know one of them is a land. And I have 4 Emrakuls in my hand and enough mana to cast them each of the next 4 turns. So I Emrakul him, and the last card in his hand is a Void Shatter. So I untap, you know, I take his turn, right? But my Emrakul is gone. And he draws, and he draws like a land, and I pass the turn. And I do this with all 4 Emrakuls, where he alternates between drawing lands and Void Shatters for 4 consecutive turns. And I lose the game because I get run out of threats, but just like the whole, the idea of drawing like counter blank, counter blank, counter blank, counter blank is just...
It's like a 1 in a million sequence.
It's like not super likely. I was just really upset because it was the kind of thing where there wasn't really anything to like... It wasn't a very good learning moment, right? I mean... You know, it's like when you say the wrong thing with Xenagos. There's nothing to, like, take away from it. You're just like, well, that sucked.
And the thing is like, it's funny because, like, I don't feel like you're telling a bad beat story either. You're just like, man, like, I'm upset about this, and, like, it's okay to be upset about it.
Well, but, I mean, I was really frustrated because that dropped me to 3-3 coming off of 2 buys, which is, you know, pretty abysmal. And it was just really frustrating because you feel like, you know, you put in all this time working on a deck for an event, you play what is ostensibly a good matchup, and, you know, when he draws 4 Void Shatters and 8 cards, but specifically in a certain sequence, it's just, like, not a thing that's going to happen very often. And when I usually get tilted is when I feel like things out of my control are, you know...
Yeah.
So I think the Xenagos thing kind of falls in the same category in the sense that it's so ridiculous. It's, like, not really, like, a magic error. It's like a...
No, it's like a misclick in real life.
Right, exactly. It's like clicking through your attack step when you have lethal, and then your right. opponent top decks an answer to kill you. Right. It's
oh
like,
man, the number of tilt stories I could tell about Omoto.
Right. Sure. I mean, we've all been there, but like those are the things that are tilting. When I actually make it like a legitimate mistake, I don't usually get tilted because it's just like, well, I shouldn't be stupid. But when you start losing to just like kind of insane randomness, it's hard to feel like. You know, all the work you put in is worth it. And
yeah, like, why do I play this stupid game?
Well, and it's easy to, like, yeah, just to let it get out of control.
Casey, you actually feel differently. Like, I think the most tilted you get is, like, when you feel like you made a dumb mistake.
Yeah, because, I mean, I know, basically, like, we've all been on both sides of variance, right? We've been lucky enough to win games we had no business winning. We've lost games we had no business losing. So when I tend to really get tilted is when it is my fault. And probably the most tilted I've ever been was a tournament where I was playing Jeskai Togens, and it was the first and only tournament that I ever played that deck. And those of you that haven't been playing Magic long enough to remember that deck or never played it, it was basically impossible. It was this like aggro combo control Jeskai Ascendancy deck.
It is easily one of the hardest decks I've ever seen. It was actually funny. If you listen to the podcast back then, we always said like, if somebody could figure out how to play this deck correctly 100% of the time, it would be oppressive.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the deck was insane. So I'm playing...
And impossible.
Yeah. So I'm playing it through like my first tournament ever with it. I end up like sneaking into top eight basically. And I'm like just jamming games with Matt all day. Matt Kling. Just to like learn how to play the deck, just to like see more interactions, see more hands, see more sequences. And like by the time we're in top eight, I'm like finally really firing on all cylinders and I make it to the finals. And I'm on the what ends up being like my last turn of game one. And my opponent's playing a Tarka Red. He's got like a couple of guys in play and one card in hand, and I'm at six life. So I'm like looking at the board and I'm trying to figure out I have one spell. And I know that, like, casting my spell and attacking him with all my guys isn't quite lethal because of his two blockers. But I have a land in my hand that I can loot away with my Jeskai Ascendancy. But, I, you know, that could be anything. So I'm, like, trying to, like, run through all the possibilities of what this card could be, what I can loot into. Like, if I draw a spell, is that going to be enough? Blah, blah, blah. Like, running through all these different sequences. And it just, like, it never quite occurs to me that Jeskai Ascendancy untaps creatures. So I'm not thinking about the fact that I'll get to... Like, I have blockers no matter how I attack. So the best thing to do is, without a doubt, attack, cast my instant, and just see where things go. And so the deck was super hard, and I was basically just went way too far into my own head. It's like one of... I think it's maybe the only time in my life I've ever gotten, like, a you-have-to-make-a-play-now call from a judge. And so I end up like attacking with some guys, but not all of them, and specifically not my Seeker of the Way, because he's the biggest creature, so I wanted him back to block. I end up attacking with whatever guys I attacked with, cast my Stoke the Flame in hand, loot my land away into something like a Valorous Stance, I don't remember what, it's not a burn spell, get in for some amount of damage, but not quite lethal. My opponent cast Lightning Strike, untap, draws Atrocious Command, and kills me. Where if I just like had the foresight to gain a life there, gain some life with my Seeker of the Way, my opponent couldn't possibly kill me because I would have infinite blockers.
Yeah, because your guys would untap.
Yeah. So like it was just like the most insanely bad, terrible, like I basically found the only possible way that I could lose that game. The only sequence that could lose the game. Oh, and I think even worse was had I done nothing, I still would have won because I had to tap a Shivan Reef to cast the Stoke the Flames in order to attack with the guys I attacked with. So I ended up going to six. That's what it was. So I literally took the only line. I found the only losing line in a sea of winning lines. Just because, like, the mental energy from the tournament was so, like, I was just exhausted. It was in, like, one of the... I've never left a Magic tournament feeling that fried
before. I remember.
That tilted me bad. It basically, I was certain that was the best deck in Standard, and I never played another game with it after this tournament, because it was like, this is just not Poth. Like, it's just, like, you're putting too high of an expectation on yourself playing this deck. I tilted myself so bad. And it was caused by a lack of preparation, just not being familiar enough to play a deck that complicated, and then just making an insane mistake that was so obviously preventable. And yeah, it was just, oh, I'm like, this was, you know, 2 years ago and I'm still mad about it. So
all of our stories here are actually quite different, right? I knew the correct line and just said the wrong thing. Your deck was so hard, you immediately knew you made the wrong decision.
Before I was even finished making it.
Yes.
Kind of, like.
Yeah. And Michael, like, yours is like, there was nothing you could do. So they're all very different. So obviously tilt can be caused by very different things. It's really about what affects you. It's not the same for every person. So we're going to go kind of one at a time kind of around the table. But, you know, I've told this story about the time that I got the creature Lightning Striked in the top eight of a PTQ, a Nolan School PTQ, and like went on turbo tilt. And between games, I went and washed my face. You know, it's a bit of the PTQ. They're untimed, like, She was like, I'm going to go to the restroom. And I went and washed my face. And even if you can't do that during the round, I highly, highly recommend, like, after the round, like throw some cold water on you, dude. Because I think that for me, it's this thing that lets you regroup. And I think all of us have these little regroup things in our tips for avoiding tilt or to combat tilt even. You know, Casey, you put what I actually did during the Xenagos thing, and you put walk out of the building.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just that's what I do. Usually, like, if there's a gas station or a grocery store or something close by, I'll walk down and get, like, an energy drink or a soda or something just to physically get out of that room where, you know, tensions just run high in Magic tournaments, especially if there's any real stakes to them. So it's just nice to get out and be able to breathe and think about something else, do something that, you know, I do every day kind of, that just center myself a little bit.
Yeah, I actually think this is really important. So I find that Magic players like to make fun of their friends for stuff like this. And I think it's really important that you don't. So at GP Portland, we were standing around, and so I was like, did Casey win or lose? And somebody was like, oh, I don't know. And I was like, well, he left the room, so I would assume he lost. He's probably taking a break. And it's funny because, like, somebody else on the team was like, oh, that's like, he has to leave the room. And I was like, well, I mean, what? I don't know what happened, but, like, it's, I think that people assume that, like, that's something you should make fun of. Like, somebody's habits to, like, make them more successful, it's actually the opposite, right? You should encourage those kind of behavior from your friend, for your friends, if it helps them, right? Like, for me, like, can you imagine making fun of me for, like, needing to go wash my face? It'd be a stupid, like...
Yeah, I mean, it's... So, I think that, like, a good-natured ribbing between friends is one thing. Like, actively being... I mean, obviously, I was out of the room, so I don't know the context here, but...
but like, you can imagine.
Like, if it's, like, somebody being, like, actively critical of me, yeah, for needing fresh air, like, that's stupid.
It's also important to notice the context, right?
Sure.
Like, I'm bringing this up because, like, it didn't matter, but it's important to note that, like... So, for GP San Jose, like, how often do we, like, watch our friends play from afar and try and decide if they won or lost from the look on their face?
Oh, always.
Like, every time we can.
Far before the match slip is signed and somebody picks it up. And, like, it's so funny because it's, like, you do it by deciding how tilted they are, right?
Yeah. And it's funny. Like, some people are really easy to read. I think you and I both are. And Michael kind
of... Oh, I feel like I'm the opposite, because everybody says I look pissed all the time while playing Magic.
So, I used to think that. You're not quite like that anymore, but, like, it's definitely... I can always tell now whether you've won or lost, but, like, Alex Sittner, I can literally never tell, because he always looks like he's, like, marching to a death camp.
That's what people used to say about me, so I'm not like that anymore?
Maybe I just know you better now, so I pick up on your tendencies better. I don't know. But, like, Danny always looks like he is, like, at Disneyland right after a match of Magic, so I can never tell with him either.
Well, so, like, my thing is, like, I always try to be nice to my opponents following a match, regardless of how it went, and sometimes, like...
I actually think that's what happened to me, is that I did this podcast, so I now act differently than I used to during matches of Magic. So because of that, it might be more obvious now.
But yeah. What I was going to say is it's hard to tell with some people. Like, Danny will just always talk to his opponent following a round of Magic. It's just something that's happening. Like, it's a fact of life. It's, you know,
oh,
like,
my gosh, when
the
he
sun,
talked to that
the
guy,
sun rises in the east.
When he talked to that guy that punted, the most egregious punt I've ever seen in Magic with the Tezzerets.
Was it the Battle at the Bridge?
The Battle at the Bridge.
Where he thought it was, like, an instant and then decided not to cast it.
Yeah,
out of
he
shame.
Talked to his opponent for like 10 minutes afterward. And I was just like, I wanted to talk to him about his opponent's egregious punt. And Danny just talked to him for like 10 minutes.
Right. It's more to note, talked to him, not talked with him.
Yeah, frequently. It's funny. It's hard not to let it get to you sometimes. But I actually think that something you can do to help yourself stay grounded a little bit rather than just flying off the chain completely is, like, oftentimes talking to your opponent a little bit, because they're usually relatively nice people, and, like, just trying to kind of have, like, a normal conversation can sometimes bring you back down to earth a little bit.
I completely agree. I think it's really helped me, you know, at GP San Jose, and I think it was the first round I lost day one. We got into a pretty good conversation afterwards where we just talked about my deck, how I built it, how he built his deck. And, I think those conversations are helpful. And I think that it's also important, like, how you present yourself during your match will actually help you avoid tilt. Because if you are kind and just being a participant in the game rather than the enemy in the game, I think will actually help both of you avoid tilt quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, after the match, your opponent is also probably, it's the person who saw what happened. They're the only real eyewitness to your bad beat story, too. So they can maybe empathize a little bit.
So don't be mean to them about it.
Right, they can, like, during the match, you know, they're the least sympathetic person in the whole room. But afterwards, it, you know, like, oh man, that sucks. Sorry that you got mana screwed, you know, whatever. Like, and you can say that and mean it, and it's not condescending or anything. Where, like, if somebody comes up after their match and talks to you about their bad beat story, you kind of just don't want to hear it at all, right?
Yeah, there's a new term that I'm thinking of coining called getting BB'd, and like, like, there's nothing worse than getting BB'd, because it's like, it's when you're both getting super unlucky, but your opponent is loudly complaining about it while it's happening to you too. And it's the worst feeling. So I think that to avoid tilt for you and your opponent, you should just always try and be really kind. Michael, the first on your list is reminding yourself of the things that you can control.
So, like, a lot of the time when you lose, it doesn't end the match, right? So you lost a game to, like, either something ridiculous you did, or something ridiculous your opponent drawed, or something, frequently something where you feel very unlucky and you feel like all this time you've put into trying to get better is really for nothing. And I won't say, like, talk out loud to yourself, because that's just going to be uncomfortable for everyone. But, like, I think actually, like, talking to yourself in your head, just, like, reminding yourself, okay, so I'm going to have, like, lots of opportunities, starting with sideboarding, to take control over this match in some way. It doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to win, but it means that I'm going to give myself, like, a realistic chance, and I'm going to do everything in my power to play good Magic. And I think that a lot of the time, if I can just walk myself through all the things that I have to do, I can sort of get my mind out of the, oh, I'm so egregiously unlucky, how did this happen to me mode, and just kind of into, like, okay, do I have a sideboard card? What do I want my deck to look like in post-board games? How am I planning to win post-board games? You know, okay, I drew my hand. Is this something I can keep? Am I looking to mulligan? If I'm looking to mulligan, you know, what am I looking for in my six? And just, like, trying to just make it about playing Magic again rather than about the game of Magic or the event that just happened to you.
Yeah. Casey, on a similar vein, you put, don't go tell your story to somebody.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that we've all been guilty of a time or two, and something that I've really been trying to get away from because it's just not productive. You don't need to tell your bad beat story. You want to, but all you're really doing is trying to be misery that loves company. You want people to tell you how unlucky you are, and it's not your fault you lost, and that's all you're really trying to get out of telling a bad beat story.
Yeah, I actually want to go a level deeper on this, too, because I know that we talked about it after GP San Jose about how I need to dial back, but I think there is something I do really well, and that's this. So, for example, there was a match where I drew, in two games, I drew, like, I don't even remember how many. It was, like, 27 lands or something like that. And, like, I didn't go telling anybody what happened. They, like, it was, Spencer, did you win that match? No, I lost. Oh, what happened? I drew 27 lands in two games. That was, like, the end of the story, right, Michael? That's all I said.
There isn't, I mean, sometimes there just isn't much more to be said.
Not only that, but, like, what is the point in going into that with you, right? Well, can you help me?
No, so I mean, I think if you have something more interesting to say,
right?
If your story is anything other than, I mean, the other
but,
thing
but
is
there
just
are people that would be like you say that, but you're friends with us, right? Whereas right. there are people that would be like, the percentages of that are astronomical, and just would go into it for like 30 minutes.
Sure. And
or
I mean,
3 years. I mean, I feel like I've been hearing about Bad Beat stories from some people forever.
So, I mean, I'm fine with hearing some of that stuff. It doesn't really bother me most of the time, but it's about being productive.
The question
is
it productive for them, and are they less tilted after getting that off their chest? Because I typically find that they're not. Because I think that like a lot of the people that are like this put themselves on life tilt. They literally are in tilt forever because of one thing or
like
two.
It's like a universe vendetta against you when it's exactly. just really, it's just actually. So I sometimes like to think about like what the odds of these things actually happening are, but I don't do that because I think I'm, you know, like permanently unlucky. I do that because I just wonder sometimes.
Well, sure. Like it's fine. Like anecdotally.
But context is important here, right?
Right. Yeah.
Like when you asked me why I lost that round, I gave you a 2-sentence answer.
Right. It, I mean, part of it is also just like sometimes so sometimes Bad Beat stories are kind of interesting, and sometimes Bad Beat stories are literally, oh, I just drew a lot of lands. I mean, you can't really win a game of Magic where you just don't draw a spell. Like, it's really challenging. Right? I mean, not really anything to say. It's
yeah. You can say, like, you know, I scryed a land to the bottom, then I drew four lands, and then I lost.
The games weren't very interesting when I drew my 11th land.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But my point is, some people will, when something like that happens, they will start telling everyone that will listen about their Bad Beat story. And they just get nothing out of it. You feel it, in theory, it's like you're getting something off your chest. But all
That's
you're
what
really
it's supposed to be,
but all you're doing is just putting those words into the world.
So there's a Utah player, I won't name his name, and he's probably not one that you guys would think that I would think of for this. But I have literally watched him walk up to players at PPDQs and GPs and be like, this is what just happened to me. And the way he prefaces it, and it's so this is why I wanted to, is like, how'd your round go? He waits for you to finish, and then he tells you his Bad Beat story.
Because you have to listen, because he listened to yours.
Yes. And then he goes to the next person, how did your round go? Waits for you to finish, tells you his Bad Beat story. And I have watched this player walk up to every single player he knows at events that he sees. And it's crazy. It's like, what did you get out of telling that story like 15 times?
Nothing. Like, pretend sympathy from 15 people. That's all you got. And that and $1.25 will get you a Coke out of most vending machines, right? Like, it just has no value.
Yeah, I agree. The next one that I have on my list is slow down. This is really helpful for you. you know, there's a real love between me and my co-host and me and my friends, and I love Casey a lot. And this week during the PPDQ, I clicked through my attack step on a game that I was going to win, where my opponent went turn one.
Toolcraft example.
So yeah, in a limited Jeep, he went turn one plains, turn two mountain, with turn one toolcraft, turn two Heart of Kirin, and I was about to win the game, and I clicked through my attack step because my opponent was playing so quickly, and it was so. And then like I misclicked again like 3 seconds later, and I like was texting Casey while I was doing it like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just misclicked. And it was so funny because like Casey texts me, he's like, yeah, you gotta slow down. You can't let them like decide your pace. And I'm like, I know that. That's why I'm upset. I want to punch you in the face, Casey. Why are you telling me something I already know? But it's funny because like what Casey's saying is like you can't be mad at your friends for like what Casey's trying to do is to calm me down and get me to slow down and be reasonable. But like this feeling that I have is tilt, right?
Oh yeah, I mean. Tilt happens.
Like,
you can't avoid ever feeling tilted.
Yeah.
It's just how you handle it.
Yeah, so how I need to handle this is like, and I did handle it this way. I didn't tell Casey that I like wanted to punch him in the face for like, tell me something I already knew. I was like, okay, he's validating the current feeling that I'm having that I need to slow down. And you need to take that validation, and especially if you're in the middle of the match and you find yourself in these situations where you're really upset. Dude, it is, you have time on the clock. It's your time. like especially on like Moto, it's okay to be like, reassess the board. This is in play. This is in play. This is in play. These are my attacks. This is what's in hand. What's the best play from this point forward?
So, right. This is kind of weird, but this happens, I think, I don't know if, like, if you're, like, driving, and you either make a really stupid move or someone in front of you does and, like, cuts you off and you have to, like, honk and slam. Have you noticed people just always, like, zoom off after that, or that if you, like, make a bad driving move, your tendency is always, like, step on the gas and get out of there?
Like, I don't want
to
be seen.
Yeah, you're trying to get as far away from it as possible, and I think that this happens a lot playing Magic, where like you make a mistake or something and then you're instantly just like trying to distance yourself from it in a way that doesn't actually, right? You're not like playing as well as you can. You're not driving as well as you can. You're just like, rather than doing the best you can going forward, you're just trying to like, okay, let's get away from that punt. Let's pretend like it never happened. And I think that just like taking a deep breath and saying, okay, I just did that. That was really stupid, but yeah. You know, okay, I didn't get in an accident, or, you know, we're still playing this game, or yeah. I'm still playing this match. The tournament isn't over.
Real life applications.
Let's calm down and just, like, let's do the best I can.
Or, like, it's so funny because, like, it goes so many ways. Like, a person cuts you off, and, like, I all right, real life tilt. So I was driving, and I was getting off the freeway, and somebody, like, literally pushed me out of my lane onto the shoulder of the freeway, just pushed me off. And he was I think he was like shipping gravel in his truck, like a big truck. And I was furious. And I followed him for miles, honking at him the entire time. And he was like flipping me off. And like, that is tilt. There's no logical reason for me to follow that guy. I followed him for like 30 minutes. I like followed him, like we were on the freeway, and I like followed him to like Eagle Mountain.
Oh, wow.
Like I followed him forever. Oh. And that's just wrong.
Man, so.
That's really far for those who don't live in Utah.
Yeah. No, that actually reminds me of when I was about 17 years old. I was the villain in the same story where I cut somebody
wait,
off.
Wait. Who's the villain in Spencer's story?
I assume the gravel guy.
Both. We're both villains.
But, so, like, I didn't, like,
I'm
run
like
somebody
actively
off.
Harassing this guy. I'm clearly a villain.
I didn't run him off the road, but I did cut somebody off. And he, you know, he honks at me. I'm like, you know, whatever, because I'm, you know, 17 and, like, you know, not the kind of person who cares about getting honked at.
Okay, so we have had to, I'm just going to drop in here. We've had a lot of recording issues this week. I'm not sure what's wrong. But we want to wrap up the training grounds right here. You know, the thing about tilt and the thing about life, and I just want to kind of say what I said on the part that got, that didn't make it to the podcast. And Michael, you're welcome to jump in here. But one of my favorite quotes and the thing about tilt here is, you know, what Michael said here about like getting about traffic is like really important in that one of my favorite quotes is, did you have a bad day or did you let a bad moment impact your day in a negative way to make it a bad day? Because you're oftentimes in control of that. Did you have a bad tournament? Or did you get unlucky in round three and never recovered from that? Did you get fired from your job because, you know, somebody didn't understand, you know, your problems? Or did you amplify your problems for weeks and weeks and weeks? You know, and that's important. And that's something that you're in control of.
Yeah, I mean, you can either choose to, like, let things that happen to you define you, or you can choose to let how you respond to those things define you, right?
Yep. Michael?
I think it's totally true. You just recovering from tilt is about removing yourself from the bad moment and just getting back to doing whatever it is you were doing before, you know, this thing happened to you. Yep. Or you were negligent and caused this bad thing.
Yep. So once again, our tips are walk out of the building. Don't go tell your story. Remind yourself of what you can control. Think about something else. Go wash your face and slow down. And we think that those things might help you out. You can support this podcast by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. You know, anything that you see fit is really appreciated. Our next goal is to get cast tokens printed, so go donate and we can get those out to everybody donating and things like that. So it's a pretty cool benefit. We're really excited about them. If you want to see Michael as a goat, go do that. You can find us on Twitter at CCMTG. You can find us on Facebook in the Constructive Criticism family, or like the Constructive Criticism page on Facebook. You can find us every week on mtgcast.com and constructivecriticism.com, as well as YouTube. You can also like the YouTube channel. Check out some of the content going on there. Michael can be found at MagicMikeMTG. Casey can be found at CCBloodthirst. I can be found at Spencer13H. You can join the clan by messaging me at Spencer13Dev. And do you guys want to do hashtag? Would that be good?
Would we have to do that one?
Would that be good?
No. So because of Tilt, we want to read really quickly. We went back and checked for hashtag. Would that be bad to see some of those bad moments?
Let's just all read our favorite.
Yeah, let's do that. Okay, what was your favorite, Michael?
Is it okay if I give my cat Red Bull? Hashtag. Would that be bad?
So every week on the podcast, by the way, before we get too far into this, you can tweet with hashtag. Would that be good? And we will read those tweets.
Every other week, not this week.
Just not this week. So about the Red Bull thing, when I got my 4-pound dog, I actually Googled, like, how much can I give my dog alcohol for real? Because, like, people do it. And the answer was no. No matter how big your dog is, don't give it alcohol. It's, like, really bad for their liver. And I would assume Red Bull is, like, in a very similar vein.
Yeah. I would assume much more. Like,
I actually would assume energy drinks are worse for you than alcohol. Like,
yeah, I mean, 8 ounces of Red Bull is way more powerful of an effect on your body than 8 ounces of beer, right?
Yeah, certainly by volume.
Like, by not close, right?
Right. I mean, if you drank, like, you know.
I mean, 8 ounces
if I drank as much Red Bull as I drank alcohol, which I do sometimes.
Yo, yeah, like, I drink a lot of it, caffeine sometimes.
Well, I mean, it depends on if you're comparing it to hard liquor or beer, right?
Obviously, right, yeah, I mean, 8 ounces of Everclear is, like, gonna put you in the dirt.
Sure. So I would say don't do that.
Yeah,
that would be bad.
I maybe wouldn't.
It would, cats are not large.
No, and you don't really want your cat to die. It would be bad.
And sad. Hashtag that would be. Would that be sad? Yes.
Yeah, that would be not as great.
Casey, what was your favorite?
I really want to shave my cat to look like a lion, and dye its fur pink. Hashtag would that be bad? Hashtag hide your cats.
So there's a picture of the cat.
Yeah,
it wouldn't look very good as a lion.
I feel like you couldn't possibly dye this cat to first cut. You couldn't cut this cat to make it look like a lion. And two, what is its fur? What fur are you cutting off to make it pink?
This looks like a bad idea. Hashtag hide your cats is definitely one that I'm going to check out in the future.
Especially when this person is around.
Yeah, this is not a person you should trust around your cat.
Yeah,
they'd probably try to give it Red Bull too. They're truly, truly soulless.
Yeah, I don't feel great about that. I don't hide your cat.
These are so
like,
great.
This one actually has layers though, because it's like she's saying that she's thinking about doing it to hers, but then she ends it with like, actually, I'm really into this idea. Hide your cat too, because I'm coming for it.
I'm doing this to all cats. All pink lions all the time. Yeah. And I hope you didn't do this, Emily. That was just not a good idea. But you've grown up some in the last 4 years. You're not out there dying cats anymore.
I don't know what my favorite one is. I feel like getting drunk tomorrow at my grandma's 91st birthday lunch. Hashtag, would that be bad? No, that sounds like a great use of time, actually.
She's not going to know. She's just going to think that's how kids talk now.
I would be disappointed if you weren't drunk during your grandma's 91st lunch birthday. Also, I can trust your criticism, and Oasis Games do not endorse.
You know where to send your hate mail.
Drinking. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Don't forget that you can...
Shaving and dying cats, frankly.
Or giving them Red Bull.
Yeah, none of the above.
None of the things endorsed.
So we come down as mostly that would be bad.
Yeah, all of these would be bad. Yeah, except also you should probably be drinking during your grandma's 91st birthday lunch. Because
it sounds truly miserable.
But you could make it great again.
Some of these
make 91st birthday lunches great again.
Some of these are so good. Like...
Maybe I do love him. Hashtag would that be bad? What?
Yeah. What? That one like has layers, right?
Yeah, but it's almost if your hashtag for that is would that be bad? The answer is yes.
About to clothesline somebody on this ice rink. Hashtag would that be bad?
I never tell anybody to do anything I wouldn't do because then humanity would go as extinct. Hashtag would that be bad? Question mark.
Depends on what species you are.
Yeah.
You're the listener to this podcast, generally, yes.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate it. And see you guys all next week.